Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Let's do a reality check. Is that a dream? Well, for those of you who wonder what we're doing here right now, we are coming out of a dream yoga, lucid dreaming workshop, which started on last Friday. And so, for those of you who have heard my former Dharma talks, I'm usually rather prepared with written out speeches and everything. This time, it's going to be different. First of all, I'm really not a teacher. I shouldn't be sitting here. Edo Roshi should be sitting here. I'm just a facilitator. So this is going to be more of a discussion-based thing today because we had a lot of direct experiences over the last 2 days and insights and some ideas how we can expand our practice. But for the benefit of all sentient beings here, I'd like to review a little bit what is lucid dreaming for those of you that haven't heard about it or haven't practiced it. But before that, thank you so much, Michael Roshi, for choosing the Sandokai. I respectfully urge you who study the mystery, do not pass your days and nights in vain. Come to think about it. So we spend about 30 years of our lives asleep. Assuming we make it to 90, and I'm assuming that everybody will make it to 90 here. Of those 30 years, we spend 7 years in REM sleep, in dreaming. And, you know, that's a long time. We can do something with those dreams. So that is what lucid dreaming is about. You actually try to become or train to become conscious in your dream. You wake up in your dream, and then you're the master of your dream. So if you decide to spend 7 years in Hawaii, go and do so. Mm-hmm. If you decide to spend 7 years in a sendo, go and do so. That's actually a wonderful thing to do. So these were some numbers to start with. And then what is lucidity? In the modern Western psychology says it's a state, as I said, you wake yourself up in your dream. There are many different techniques, and I've been fortunate enough to study with some of the most, with the pioneer in lucid dreaming, Dr. Stephen LaBerge. I've been on his research team recently in Hawaii, and I've learned a lot. And that's Western psychology. So he was the one who actually scientifically proved, that we can wake up in our dreams. Of course, he's not the first person who ever had a lucid dream. Anybody can have a lucid dream, and it's been around for quite a while in history. And, of course, in Tibetan practice, lucid dreaming, Tibetan dream yoga, is a very integral part of their practice. And you don't start Tibetan dream yoga at the beginning. You have to be a pretty good meditator before you start going into dream yoga. And that's where you learn. You can gain insights on concepts like emptiness, grasping on the reality, quote-unquote, of life. And actually, the Tibetan point of view is that we have a much better chance to wake up or to realize this illusionary world out there in our dreams than in our very foggy waking life. It's a very interesting concept. So it's been around for a while. Many people have practiced it. And it's a wonderful practice. So just to give you some idea what can be done, what the potential benefits of lucid dreaming are, more in a Western psychological concept, it's really a fun and wish fulfillment thing. I mean, you can basically, if you wake up in your dream, if you want to fly, you fly. If you want to swim with the dolphins, you swim with the dolphins. You can conjure up anything you want. And of course, it's particularly important for people who have physical limitations in their lives. Alan Wallace, another student and wonderful teacher also of Stephen LaBerge, just wrote a book on dreaming yourself awake, Tibetan Dream Yoga. And he talks about one of his students or friends who has a severe physical disability. She's bound to a wheelchair, but she's awake in her dreams every night. And that's where she runs and jumps and flies. And she's one of the happiest persons, he says, he has met. She has found a way to overcome her disability. Then, of course, lucid dreaming is also a playground for psychological and physical healing. Aren't we quite often in situations where we have unfinished business? Either the person we had some problem with has passed away, or we know very well that we never again will be able to speak to that person. Situations like that do arise. Let's not kid ourselves. There are situations like that. And it's very, very hurtful to carry around this burden of regret or this burden of things you should have done differently. So once you're able to wake yourself up in your dream, you can conjure up that person. You can ask this person to join you. You can replay that situation, or you can just sit there and meet this person, be with somebody, and talk to them, talk it over, give them a hug, look in their eyes and see that the only way to overcome differences and problems is really compassion in the end. And you don't have to embarrass yourself by actually trying to do it first in waking life and that person snubs you. You just do it in your dream. That's a wonderful way. And again, it's going to be very healing for you because, as I said, there are going to be situations where that person is gone or where you're just not yet there to confront them. It happens. But again, there's no reason for you to hang on to those hurt and anger. And then there's another very interesting part. It's performance training and creativity. There are actually a lot of artists and people out there that have their little studio in their dreamscape or their writing pad, their journal. At one point, and I shared it with the participants of the dream workshop, when I started studying tea with Jarrow, at one point I built myself a little tea hut in my dreams and I started practicing tea. And, that speeds up the learning curve, at least at the beginning. And in my work with children, that's the same thing. So I do work with children with learning disabilities, and quite often I just need to mention that they can practice in their dreams without any fears, and quite often they just do that because children are natural lucid dreamers. And by doing that, they actually come back with a lot more self-esteem and they think they can do it because they have practiced. So that's been quite an interesting insight. And then you can also, of course, use it for your spiritual pursuits, whatever those may be. I personally found that contemplating on a concept that I've just heard, some sentence from Dogen, or maybe the concept of emptiness, that's a particularly good one in your lucid dream. It's nice. You can actually incubate a question during the day you ask yourself, you bring up that question to your mind. What do you want to understand? The phenomenon of emptiness. What is it? And if you're lucky and you get enough sleep and you wake yourself up in your dream, you might gain some pretty incredible insights. Well, this is just an idea thrown out there. And actually, I would like to start asking Dream Workshop participants and everybody else in here, do you have any other ideas how we could integrate this practice into our Zen practice, which at times doesn't really talk that much about practicing at night? I only found that in the Sandokai. But maybe you have some ideas out there.
I wanted to say that the Zen day begins in the afternoon and incorporates sleep as part of the day. So 4 o'clock in the afternoon is the ceremony of atonement.
Uh-huh.
And then the day begins.
Oh, wow. Wonderful to know that.
Yeah.
In daily practice. Yeah. So
Thank you for sharing that.
So the nighttime is pretty good too.
I have an interesting theory that I'll share later if it's appropriate, but could you talk about the difference between mindfulness, for example, during our normal waking time and lucidity in our dream times?
Very, very interesting question. Thank you for bringing that up, because we won't have much of a chance to become lucid if we're not mindful. So we had this little practice, and in order to remember, to give yourself a cue, a clue to wake up in your dream, you have to be pretty sharp. So if you see, you know, during our dreams, nice stories, we usually go along with our dreams, just we go along with our waking life. And if a pink cat walks in front of us, so what? We usually go along with that because we are not really attentive or mindful. So practicing mindfulness during the day, which is something that Stephen LaBerge calls reality checks. So whenever we find something weird, like a pink cat, we check, are we dreaming or not? Or we set ourselves goals, like during this retreat we had the goal that whenever we see an animal, we'll do a reality check, which is quite fun. So we either had little bracelets, we try to read our bracelets, because in dreams, you usually only can read something once if you glance away and look back. Quite often, it has changed. So that's one way to check whether you're dreaming or not. Or you pull your nose, because in your dream, usually your nose becomes a long Pinocchio nose. Which then, if that happens in your dream, it's a clue for you that you're dreaming, which wakes you up. But in general, that mindfulness is incredibly helpful and important to remember. Prospective memory, to remember something in the future. So next time I see a pink cat, I'll do my reality check. Next time I see a deceased friend of mine with me in the room and I'm having dinner with him, I do a reality check. Next time, if I find myself in my dream and I'm in a place that is not Chikoji, better do a reality check. So mindfulness is incredibly important, and I've noticed that sometimes I share that with group participants, that our lost and found bin is always overflowing. So sometimes this mindfulness thing is a little difficult for everybody, but especially if you're on a retreat. So yeah, mindfulness is absolutely essential, and I think Michael Roshi shared with us being mindful of how to open doors, close doors, and how to move a chair. So you're actually always on your toes. Always on your toes. Be mindful, be conscious. Be there, be present.
I see difference between mindfulness and controlling the dream. Having this workshop during the last few days, I like the attention that I was paying more attention to my dreams, but I didn't want to control them. I just, like when we sit, we just observe our dream, our thoughts. But controlling the dreams is, I think, a little different, right?
You don't have to control your dream. If you just wake yourself up in a dream and then mindfully observe what is going on, that's already wonderful. I think control is highly overrated. It empowers you, I have to say. If I can build my own sendo in my own dream space, it kind of is nice. If I can change that pink cat into a green cat, that's cool. If I have not one cat, but 20 cats in my dream and multiply them, yeah, that's fun. But you don't have to be active in your dream. Actually, it's a beautiful practice to just be present and know that you're awake and aware, and you just let it play out in front of you.
interesting because it's an internal work,
mm-hmm.
and it's already there. It's already created by me.
Mm-hmm.
So now I can control it, means I have already created this. I can change it. But, yeah, it's interesting. Thank you.
Sometimes I've heard from a Tibetan teacher that mindfulness can be applied forcefully, depending on how your mind is. It can be applied very forcefully, like you have an object of meditation, or it can be applied very lightly. And the Tibetan illustration is like mindfulness is like brushing a feather onto the presence or the object of your meditation. So you don't kind of hold on to the object of your meditation, like control. So just brush it with your attention. So there's a kind of degrees of a kind of refined quality that as you meditate and maybe as you develop skill in this sort of dream work as well, you develop a kind of skill of not pushing too hard to control something, which I think in a dream situation, if you did that, you might get too excited and wake up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, literally wake up. Yeah. So you have to be very careful to just attend to it, but not harm it.
Mm-hmm.
Not harm it, which is what we do in practice, and actually what we do in, hopefully, in daily life and in relationships too. So,
mm-hmm.
Nice parallel. Well, good question.
Good response.
Thank you. It's and I could see this time during this workshop how our practice really helped us. I mean, it's quite amazing how basically everybody had some pretty profound experiences, and we had experienced meditators. Everybody here meditates and knows how to quiet the mind, how to focus and stabilize your awareness. So that is really a very, very good practice before you start going into dream work. Yeah, and that spills over. It's wonderful how those two worlds connect. Also, I found that lucid dreaming is incredibly helpful to understand fear. So we've been talking about nightmares, and many people don't dream because they have nightmares and they're afraid of them. Everybody dreams, but people don't recall their dreams because nightmares can be pretty scary. And lucid dreams are a wonderful, wonderful tool to practice, to accept whatever is chasing you. As I think Robert Moss, another wonderful teacher of mine, said, that a nightmare is just an unfinished dream. So as long as we keep on running away from whatever is chasing us, we won't finish the dream. So again, to bring it into Buddhist practice, turning around, and as Stephen in one of his books describes it, he had this monster chasing him for many, many nights. It was a recurring nightmare. And he's a very advanced lucid dreamer, but it hadn't quite occurred to him to face it. But one night he just did it. He said, "That's enough now." So he stopped, he turned around, he faced that monster. And he describes at that moment he looked into that monster's eyes and he realized, that's another sentient being. And he applied what he called compassion. And the monster just melted into him. So in a Jungian sense, it would be accepting your shadow. In a Buddhist sense, we practice compassion, even with our own fears.
Okay. Okay, do you remember we watched that movie the other night?
Yes.
Hush Puppy turned around.
Yes.
And
exactly.
The beast.
Exactly. We watched this excerpt yesterday, and actually we had people dreaming about it. Isn't that wonderful?
Mm.
We practiced.
Mm.
Another experience I have is when I read a Prajnaparamita now, I think, this is just, you should read a Prajnaparamita in your dreams. No eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Without any hindrance, no fears exist. I mean, that lucid dreamscape is the perfect realm, that perfect laboratory to experience the Prajnaparamita firsthand. Make up your own story. Alan, in his book, also talks about, emptiness and how we can experience or understand or grasp or and get an idea of the concept of emptiness in our dreams, because they're just so much more malleable. Well, this is a teacup, clear to everybody, so clear form, teacup, everybody realizes that. Well, used to be clay at one point, right? And maybe 1,000 years from now, somebody finds the teacup and decides it's a flower pot. So is it really a teacup? It's even more difficult on a subatomic level, but I'm not an expert on that. But again, in our dreams, we can kind of directly experience that. Just make it from clay, make the teacup, make it into dust again. Any other ideas out there? What to do with emptiness or grasping or not dwelling on past mistakes?
It occurred to me that when you said that, that one of the practices is to study the origin factors and the dissolution factors of all dharmas, of all phenomena, so that there's phenomena and has a name. It provisionally has a name, but it also has an origin factor and a dissolution factor, so to say, rising and ceasing of all phenomena, which is hard for us to do, but that's embedded in Buddhist understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I keep thinking back what I was talking about with Cliff initially when he mentioned mind at rest, and I had brought this up before thinking about it and reading sentences by Berge of that the mind in the waking state is primarily organizing from perceptions and from our senses. And when we are asleep, particularly in REM, that there's this phenomenon of semi-paralysis. And the mind needs almost to have stimulus. So it actually showers itself with electrochemical to, in fact, generate images, dream. But then I came back to what I was interpreting, what Kut was saying, at rest. And so here, when we sit, we're not dreaming, we're not asleep, and yet we're very still, and the senses, to me, are buffered. We create this artificial environment, so in fact, much of our senses are dampened in a certain way. And I do sense this occasionally glimmer of rest. wind, all the thoughts and emotions, and coming back to the breath, and something else starts to take place, which is not like dreaming, I don't think. So I think there's this phenomenon kind of business, I think, is, I see it, I sense it as being this different in that way. I don't know if that makes sense, but...
No, thank you for sharing that. It does. Minds are pretty wide, whether we sit zazen or dream lucidly, or become lucid in a non-REM state, which is also Tibetan practice. Actually, you can't be lucid during 8 hours of sleep. So you're just in the darkness, but you're aware that you're sleeping. So much more to explore out there. Much more. I had one funny little practice I devised at one point. I think we were talking about does a dog or does a cat have Buddha nature? So in my dream, I had plenty of cats, and it's a Tibetan dream yoga practice, so your dream figures, you turn them into little deities. So I turned all these cats into little Buddhas. So for me, cats, of course, do have Buddha nature. In my dream, at least. So, you know, I'm, as an educational therapist, I realized that not everybody learns the same way. So, at least for me, sometimes a very active approach to some Buddhist concepts is helpful. And I know for many of the children I work with, too, there are some that are visual, some that are kinesthetic, some that do learn in very different kinds. And I'm a visual learner, so turning all those little cats into little Buddhas had a profound effect.
It's said that cats sleep 20 hours a day.
Well, they are our best teachers.
Can I come back just for a moment to Vedad's, question? Because I think that, at least I'm only speaking from my own experience in this, this going into repose is a lot easier than coming out of that repose into the lucid dream, it seems to me. Because the function of the brain is to be at attention and to work, to care for us in the function of daily life. So somehow we have to sidestep, it seems to me, that particular field. So it's not so much about control as it is about the natural brain's response to moving out of repose into awake state. And it's a very subtle field, it seems to me. So that's why it's not called exactly lucidity, but lucid dreaming, mm-hmm. because we remain in a dream state and we sidestep, it seems to me, what the function of the brain is to be care for our emotions and so forth. But please tell me if I'm wrong about this. But it's a really subtle work that requires practice, seems to me, since I'm only coming new into this subject. Since there are quite a few of us who woke up immediately last night after having a dream, we woke up because we may be grasping the dream, but it's also a function of the brain. So we often think that we are trying to control everything. It's just natural to have that happen until we learn to stay in repose to some degree so that we allow the brain to be the brain, but we stay sort of asleep or lucidly in it. It's very tricky, it seems to me. It's a very, very subtle field.
Yeah, I quite agree. Very much so. So it is work. So if anybody thinks lucid dreaming is something that is, you just do it, well, you can have a few spontaneous lucid dreams, but if you want to make it a practice, it requires work, just like any kind of practice. And we get better at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. It's a trainable skill, so that's the positive outlook. It's an absolutely trainable skill, and if you have enough interest and motivation and desire, it will, and the tools, which are available in Stephen's books, it's a nice field. Yeah.
I know Robert Moss and Waldo Wagner kind of say that you really can't control the dreams even if you want to, that you can control aspects, but it's always mm-hmm. unpredictable. I think there's an analogy one of them used, that it's like a sailor sailing a boat, that mm-hmm. he's controlling the boat, but he's not controlling the sea.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the same with the lucid dream. Mm-hmm. You can control elements, but
yeah.
something unexpected and uncontrollable mm-hmm. will happen.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Although, again, I think it depends on your degree of proficiency. And Robert Moss and Robert Wagner come out of very different traditions, and so they are limited by their idea of what lucid dreaming is. So I wouldn't say it can't be done, but it's certainly hard to have total control of your dream. And I think it's way too much work. I'd rather incubate a dream on something like on the concept of emptiness, and then go with that incubation, but be lucid and just do the task that the dream brings up at that moment. Yeah, and well, we always like to be in control in a way, so it's actually quite nice to just change little things, so you don't have to be in total control.
So within the dream, then, the issue of trust or acceptance is something to consider, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you trust that, like the boat, that the boat, you know that boat. You know. You don't know what the weather's like, maybe, but you know your boat. So
yeah.
You can trust
I think very
it's
much
going
so.
Well.
Yeah.
Huh?
Especially if you've set an intention that you want to dream on a specific subject, you have to kind of understand that your subconscious is probably trying the best to offer you what you were asking for. And if you happen to encounter any scary aspects or any nightmarish things, there are very good tools to take care of that. I think we talked about it yesterday, if you find yourself falling, there are tools. If you find yourself falling, you're afraid you're going to scatter when you fall to the ground. No, you turn it around, you start flying. You can fly in your dreams, remember? Or you just imagine yourself falling on a very soft, nice bed or a mattress. So these aspects are easy to dream. If something scary comes up, you definitely should act, because it's no fun to be in a nightmare. And I don't think it's very useful either. I mean, my nightmares are there to be... There's some problems that you need to look at or encounter. So, but in general, yeah, I think just rely on what you had set your intention out for.
I'm thinking about this image of the boat, and I'm thinking about how, for me, a couple of days, I felt sort of like the fisherman who was standing on the boat, and every time a dream began, I got so excited that I lost that sense of stillness and composure and threw myself just completely out of the dream space into back to waking life. So I'm wondering if the lucid dream is it the pole? Is it the fish? Is it the boat?
It's whatever you want it to be.
it seems like the excitement itself would be lucidity, wouldn't it?
What did you say? What did you say?
I don't know. Unfortunately,
say it again. She didn't hear you. Say
it seems like the excitement itself would be lucidity.
Oh, yeah?
Maybe. Unfortunately, it woke you up.
But I guess if you're trying to create that bridge of the connection between the two, that's what I guess I'm trying to refer to here. Like, what is the stream that keeps, can you articulate that, Karen, since you have the experience with this, of what that is right there that keeps that makes it possible to be in both waking and asleep at the same time?
It's, again, I have to refer back to my teachers. It's the intention you're setting. So intention and motivation is a very, very important, or the most important tool in lucid dreaming. But that might mean something different for every single dreamer, because it's a very, very private practice in so many ways. And I know lucidity, no two people experience the same kind of lucidity or the same kind of practice. But intention and the daytime practice are important, and meditation. It just helps you keep that stability and calms down the excitement. I know the last few days have been terribly exciting for everybody. And I know we've all been a little bit in overdrive, and people started lucid dreaming before the workshop, and people shared their dreams, and it just got very exciting. But now that you have learned a few tools and you go home, you have a more quiet and more stable environment, you might want to keep and stretch your lucidity a little longer. That might very well be the case.
I never had a rainbow pen before.
No, you have a rainbow pen.
Very exciting.
Well, and I know a person that had dream food, so maybe now we have real food instead.
One last. You started out saying that you're not a teacher. I disagree completely. So I think many people feel the same. So. Very humble of you, but I look forward to learning more from you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for this wonderful weekend.